Dan, we are talking about dueling with kings, high stakes, killer sharks, and the get-rich promise of daily fantasy sports. So, Dan, thank you first and foremost for joining me this afternoon.
Chris, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, basically, let me brief the people on exactly, and tell me if I'm wrong here, your sort of career path and what brought you to writing this book. You were a beat writer for the New York Yankees, if I'm not mistaken, for the Wall Street Journal, and you decided you wanted to jump into the world of daily fantasy sports. Is that correct?
That is the basic idea, yeah. I was covering the Yankees. I'd been on it for 5 years at the Wall Street Journal. I'd done some news and politics before that, and I'd also covered the Red Sox up in Boston. But my most recent experience was at the Journal. And, you know, when I discovered DFS, which was in about May of 2015, actually in the Fenway Park press box when another reporter kind of turned me onto it, I was pretty blown away. I was like, whoa, A, where did this come from? This is amazing. I am super into this. And B, how are more people not talking about this? This was before the ad blitz. This was before, you know, everything went crazy. And so, you know, I think the mass of people did not really know what this was. And I certainly didn't really at the time. You know, the more I got into it, the more I found, you know, A, I thought the game was great, but there were also a lot of things, certainly at the time in the industry, that, you know, kind of made me raise an eyebrow in terms of, you know, things that we all know now, looking back, were kind of things that shouldn't have happened, like employee play on opposing sites and that kind of stuff. And, you know, so I thought, okay, there's a bigger story here. A, this thing is fascinating to me and also a lot of fun, but B, there seem to be some things in it where it's grown maybe a little too fast, and it seems like there aren't perhaps the proper controls in place to protect the average player who's going to show up and want to, you know, turn his fantasy football knowledge and his $50 into, you know, a longer-term ability to play this thing, and he's probably going to show up and get beat pretty quickly the way that things are right now. So I wanted to go in and see, all right, you know, can this be a good, sustainable industry, business, game for people to play? And also, you know, how do I test that out? So I figured the best way to do it was I should just become one myself. I should see, am I, who was clearly a fish at the time, can I go from fish to quote-unquote shark, you know, top player in the space of about a year? And so that's kind of what I set out to test while being able to tell the whole story of the industry and where it came from and what it went through and all that happened along the way, which obviously ended up being crazier than I expected it to be, but was a pretty fascinating story.
And so I want you to tell me a little bit about that story, Daniel, because I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that I sometimes daydream back here at my desk and think to myself, you know what? I love playing, especially fantasy baseball. I love playing on DraftKings and FanDuel. Why can't I start setting lineups and building my bankroll and playing amongst these sharks, the Beeps, I'm a Jeeps, the Al Zeidenfels, the Tommy G's of the world, the guys at Roto Grinders? Why can't that be me? How was your experience as you grew your bankroll, or did you, in fact, grow the bankroll, or were you losing more often than you were winning?
Well, I mean, look, the short answer is yes, you can, but you got to be realistic in that it's not easy to do. Certainly at the beginning, I mean, I thought I was a baseball expert. You know, I thought I was going to be great, and I turned out to be terrible, certainly at baseball. You know, I became, certainly an almost five-figure loser over the course of the first half of my experiences in the book, just trying to be in this world and meet people and tell the story and understand it and, you know, get in with the biggest players in the game. You know, I was not good for a long time, and that was extremely emotionally galling and all that. But over time, and actually so with Beep, I'm a Jeep, who became my mentor, once he kind of agreed to take me on as a protege, obviously things started to turn around, but it still took a while. He basically wanted to build me from the ground up. He said, you are a baseball expert, and that's a problem here. You think this is all about sports knowledge, and it's not. It's about understanding the games themselves. And so he wanted to start me in the world of fantasy hockey and kind of make me focus more on things like game theory and, you know, bankroll management and game selection and linear optimization, all kinds of stuff. And so I was like, that's crazy. I don't know anything about hockey, dude. I literally haven't paid into hockey since like the 94 Rangers. He was like, that's a good thing. That's going to be good for you here. So once we kind of understood that and he started kind of building me in that way, I started to do a lot better. But that's, I mean, I think a fascinating thing for people who think, oh, I know sports. I'm kind of good at fantasy. I should go become a pro at this. Well, it ain't that easy. And the people who are really, really good at it are really, really good for a reason. You know, they have not only bankrolls, but they are very smart people who sometimes have teams behind them and have, you know, really put a lot of time into building good models and really understand how the game works. That doesn't mean a regular guy can't just show up and win. He can, absolutely, but it's hard to do.
And I'm glad you mentioned Beep I'm a Jeep and not being so much a huge sports knowledge guy, because I heard a story at some event and he said, oh yeah, that Mets starting pitcher, the really good one, is on the mound tonight. And they go, what are you talking about, Matt Harvey? And they go, oh yeah, that's Matt Harvey. So you're absolutely right. And that kind of ties into my question here, Daniel, is how much were these, in your research and your findings, algorithms play a part into lineup building? Because we hear a lot of these big time sites, that's how they are generating the optimal lineups, and that's how they're offering to people, and that's how they're able also to enter in so many different things into these multi-entry contests, which is a whole controversial figure in itself.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. So Beep, you know, who is probably the biggest character in the book other than me, you know, and the first time I met him, he was like, Yeah, you know, I played Albert Pujols in a lineup today, and he didn't do very well for me, and, you know, and Jose Altuve, and I was like, oh, you don't know who these guys are, do you? And he's like, no, it doesn't matter. And that was kind of a rude awakening for me, but he was right. It's about the math, and it's about understanding that, you know, and again, sports knowledge plays a role, but understanding the games is so much more important at a kind of basic level. And so, you know, in that case, like, so I was never an algorithm guy. I don't use models and algorithms and stuff, and I, you know, as you potentially can see in the book, end up becoming pretty successful. But for certainly the high volume players, and for the players who are, you know, putting in hundreds of lineups as possible, now you can't really do more than 150 anymore, which is a good thing, by the way, but yes, who were for a long time putting in hundreds of lineups and trying to, you know, flood the field with really smart, well-correlated entries, yeah, there's a lot of computer knowledge behind that. And, you know, that's what certainly at the beginning the average guy didn't know going in. Now, I think there's been a lot more education about that now, and people understand that, yeah, it's a tough playing field. It's a lot of people who are hard to beat out there. And sometimes it is kind of daily fantasy Skynet, and you're fighting against, you know, an army of machines, it can feel like. But I actually think the companies have done, I have a lot of problems with a lot of things the companies did, and you see that in the book through this, but I actually think they have done a lot of good things, certainly under outside media and regulatory pressure, to make the games more fair in the last year and a half. And, you know, it's funny, in the book, when I'm just sucking and losing money and I'm just so lousy, you know, right around when they start introducing changes to things like the multi-entry caps and all that is when I actually start to become successful. And so I think there are a number of factors at play there, but I do think that was one of them.
All right, and I want to ask you, too, about the merger. We're expecting that to happen a little bit later this year. Do you think that ultimately this is a good thing for the daily fantasy sports industry, or did you find that, you know, it was nice that both, whether it's DraftKings offering two starting pitchers opposed to one, or whether it's PPR compared to non-PPR between FanDuel and DraftKings, do you think this is a good thing?
Generally speaking, I think competition is always good. You know, variety is always good for the consumer. Monopolies are almost never good for the consumer. And now, you know, they're going to argue that they're not a monopoly because at any time ESPN could jump in with a very much, with a big-time daily fantasy product. Yahoo could really expand its daily fantasy product. And those things are probably true. At the same time, you know, these guys own 90% of the market right now. They are the game in town at the moment. And so, you know, yeah, when you turn them into one, it's probably good for the sustainability of the industry in the sense that I think that will allow them to raise money, expand, not, you know, have to fight each other all the time. It will allow the industry to be stable and survive. And I think that's, for people who like daily fantasy, that's a good thing. But for, in terms of the actual day-to-day experience of daily fantasy players, I can't see how a unified site is going to provide more variety or lower rake or that kind of stuff. It just doesn't seem to make sense that it would. You know, you generally, when you don't have competition and you don't have variety, why would you want to provide multiple offerings? So what I think they'll do is there's going to be certain types of, let's say, you know, however they combine, whether it's, you know, they both become DraftKings, they both become FanDuel, or they become FanKings, or whatever the heck it is, I think they will try to keep elements of both sites around. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, that I think they are definitely going to try to make a conscious effort to keep parts of the things that people like about both sites now. But at the end of the day, it's definitely going to lead to less variety for the consumer.
All right, and you mentioned in this book that typical bros that I was taking out of here looking to live in an endless frat party, and I would probably describe myself as that as well. But for somebody that wants to make money playing daily fantasy sports, how would you suggest going about doing that? Is it something that you need to make a pretty large investment into your bankroll, or can you just start by playing the double ups, triple ups, by building your bankroll? And then secondly, what would you suggest to those people who, hey, they play these big tournaments? How likely are you to, you know, hit any of these and beat these so-called sharks that you can really make a significant amount of money where, hey, I'm not saying necessarily quit your job, but, you know, you can maybe make a mortgage payment on a monthly basis or something like that?
I mean, the most important thing I think that people would need to have if they were actually going to really try to do this in a money-making sense and not just an entertainment and maybe get a little side cash sense is time. The most important resource that pros have that you don't is time. And people don't realize that, but that's the most valuable thing, is they're spending all day doing this. And if you're, you know, clicking off of your work page at 4 p.m. and checking off stuff out for 15 minutes, being like, yeah, that looks good, you're probably not putting yourself in the best spot against somebody who is practiced at this and does have a larger bankroll and does potentially have some good models behind them. You know, again, I don't think that most of the quote-unquote sharks are that much, you know, far. There are some very, very smart guys in this, but this is not an unbeatable industry or an unbeatable game. But it is getting much harder as time goes on. I've noticed that even just over my, you know, say 2 years in this. The competition level is simply much higher now. People understand the game so much better. If you're going to really try to make a, you know, even a semi-living out of this, a side living out of this, you've got to really commit to it. And that doesn't just involve bankroll. It probably does involve mostly, you know, much more tournament play than people might want in terms of trying to get those big prizes at the top. But, you know, you got to put time in, you got to put bankroll in, you got to really just devote a lot of yourself to understanding how the games work, understanding game selection in terms of what you're talking about, understanding how different kind of lineups are useful for different kind of situations, and yeah, staying on top of all the sports knowledge you can, because that is still, despite the fact that Beep can't pronounce any guys' names, it's still a big part of it.
I wanted to ask you about the future of daily fantasy sports. We know that they're going to be merging, but they've dealt with their fair share of legal issues here. I know that in Virginia, you know, they were creating legislature. Do you think that the game will continue to grow in terms of participation, or do you find that there are a lot of people with the notion out there that should think, you know what, I'm not playing this, I'm content with my season-long leagues, and I'm just going to stick with that. I don't want to get burned by these so-called sharks. What do you think about the future of daily fantasy sports?
I think that unfortunately for the companies, you know, they had their moment when they thought they were going to take over the world and change the way everyone in America consumed sports. And on every Monday and Tuesday, you were going to be at the water cooler talking about your daily fantasy teams. And it was close to that, but in the end, it didn't go that way. And I think that they are still rebuilding the trust that they lost during that time period, and, you know, when they were just too focused on growth. And I think it's going to take them some time to build that back up. I think they are going to grow gradually and slowly over time. You know, I think that the legislative things they've done are actually kind of incredible. I didn't ever expect they could pull off the kind of, you know, lobbying efforts that they have done, and certainly Virginia is a great example of that, where they're really having a lot of success in state houses across the country making their stuff explicitly legal. I think that, you know, once they are mostly legalized in a lot of places, and once they actually have merged potentially and are able to more easily raise money, then I think that they're going to, you know, see some more growth there in a more significant way. But, you know, this is not something that's going to see, I think, a huge boom again like what people thought it was going to be in 2015.